and welcome to the latest edition of Scripps M&A Podcast, where we discuss activity, trends, and possibilities in the arena of biopharmaceutical mergers and acquisitions. Today, we'll be expanding that a bit to also discuss asset-based transactions. I'm Joe Haas, a senior writer with Scripps based in the U.S., and today I am joined by two of my UK-based colleagues, Kevin Grogan, a managing editor of Scripps, and Edwin Elmhurst, a data journalist for Scripps. Hey, Kevin.
Hi, Joe. Hi, everybody. Yes, I'm looking forward to this immensely. Good to have a chat about. I'm going to talk specifically about one company that I think is going to be very ripe for a takeover. That's Verona Pharma. We'll go into it in a lot more detail. Yes, I'm looking forward to the chat. And hi, Edwin.
Hello. So I'm Edwin, Sightline's data journalist. And in February, I wrote an article for InVivo looking at high-value unpartnered assets, which could be the focus of deal-making in the near future. And today, I'm briefly going to talk about three companies that were highlighted in that piece, which perhaps have slightly more potential as takeout targets than licensing partners. And I will not spoil the surprise as to which three they are.
Today, we're going to discuss companies and assets that might be especially appealing for acquisition. Kevin said he's going to talk about Verona. I will be talking about Viking Therapeutics, and Edwin will talk about several unpartnered assets that he thinks will be appealing to a broad range of the biopharma industry. Viking Pharmaceuticals, which is U.S.-based in California, has a pair of phase two candidates with impressive data in both obesity and in metabolic-associated steatohepatitis, also known as MASH, formerly known as NASH, if you prefer. And both of these investigational drugs have been tabbed by analysts as potential blockbusters. Viking, although clinical stage, has been making headlines for several years now, first in the MASH space with VK2809. It's interesting because Madrigal Pharmaceuticals got Rezdiffra approved by the FDA in March as the first MASH drug, and it was just launched this week. Viking's VK2809 is in the same class, the THR beta agonists. A number of different classes are being tested in MASH, which is a multifactorial disease, so you can go at it by trying to improve fibrosis, by trying to address hepatic fat, by trying to address inflammation. Many different drug classes have been tried and are being tried in this, but here, Viking's VK2809 is kind of a follow-on to Rezdiffra. It's posted impressive efficacy and safety data so far, and the company has Voyage, a phase 2b study ongoing in MASH, and expects to report the data from that this quarter. They think that their THR beta agonist might offer a tolerability edge because it's a more potent molecule than Madrigal's and therefore can be given at lower doses. So they've been making headlines with that for several years. Particularly while, you know, the MASH space was in upheaval with failures and complete response letters and just so many different companies pursuing different mechanisms of action. More recently, Viking has surfaced also as a contender in the obesity / weight loss class with VK2735, which is a GLP-1 GIP dual agonist. That's the same class as Eli Lilly's tirzepatide, which is branded as Zepbound for obesity. It's also approved for type 2 diabetes. And Zepbound is competing directly with Novo Nordisk's GLP-1 analog semaglutide, which is approved for obesity, as Wegovy. This has become one of the biggest stories in biopharma recently. Again, as in MASH, many companies are competing, although here it's not as many different classes. It's combinations of different agents that might work on glucagon receptors, up to three MOAs in one therapy. But VK2735 already caught some attention with phase two data of a subcutaneous formulation that analyst called very competitive based on efficacy. And then at the end of last month, on March 26th, Viking came out with phase 1B data for an oral formulation of 2735. And that showed not only good efficacy, it produced a 5.3% weight reduction at 4 weeks, but it had a tolerability profile as an oral that is unmatched to date in the injectable GLP-1 space. So it's just been very impressive. For these reasons, I think Viking is probably a very apt takeout candidate right now. I can think of a number of companies that probably would be interested in acquiring Viking. Just to look at a little background, Viking's market cap right now is over $7.7 billion. They had $362 million in cash at the end of 2023, and on the strength of the data for 2735 in March, they grossed $632 million on a follow-on. So they've got nearly $1 billion in cash. Now, I had a chance to talk to Viking CEO Brian Lien. Obviously, he was circumspect about whether they're hearing interest from potential acquirers. I don't think there's much doubt that they are. Whether those are appealing offers, hard to say. What he said to me was that if something makes great sense, we will certainly pursue it. And that's, you know, that's kind of him publicly taking his due diligence, because as a publicly traded company, they're required to consider valid offers. But he told me that they think they're well capitalized today. They anticipate advancing both programs, the MASH and the obesity programs, on their own until something else comes forth. But interesting, what he also told me is they're starting to think of the MASH asset, Viking VK2809, as a partnering asset. They really think that they want to put their main focus on obesity, which I think is understandable, but surprising, because this was a company that up until 6 months ago or so had made its name in MASH. And that's still a developing story with expectations that a lot of different drugs are going to be approved, and that over time, a standard of care of combination therapy will emerge, kind of similar to what we saw in both HIV and hepatitis C. So Viking certainly has a chance to be a major competitor in the MASH space. The obesity space, however, is even more lucrative, and that's where they are planning to place their main bet, is what I heard from Brian Lien yesterday. When we talked about the idea of them partnering the MASH asset, what he said they want to do is they want to get the phase 2B data, which they expect this quarter, and see what they have, go to FDA, have an end of phase 2 meeting with FDA, and assess the lay of the land in terms of what a phase 3 program would look like, what it would cost, what the competition looks like. Brian did tell me that obviously they're monitoring the launch of Rezdiffra to see about lessons learned. Meanwhile, with the obesity drug, the phase 1B study, because they feel they have not even necessarily reached the peak of efficacy they can have with the oral, they have launched another cohort of the phase 1B trial where they're studying a 60 milligram daily dose to see how that looks on both efficacy and tolerability safety. And he said it's possible they could look at even bigger doses after that, but you know, eventually they want to start their phase 2 program in obesity and pick the optimal doses. To this point, the highest dose they have data for with the oral obesity drug is 40 milligrams, and that looked very good, and the tolerability and safety was so good that they thought, you know, the sweet spot might be with an even higher dose. When I asked Brian about what they want to do with the MASH program, he said that all things considered, if they do partner it out, that they would prefer a licensing arrangement where they would get, you know, an upfront payment and then some earnouts, some milestones and sales royalties and that nature. So it sounds like they really want to offload their MASH program and let somebody else do the clinical development from here, take on the cost of phase three, and of course the accompanying risk, because there have been a lot of setbacks in MASH development, and there is already an established drug in its class on the market. So even with a tolerability advantage, they probably would need to show some efficacy advantage also to have a good chance of approval, or if approved, to get uptake. So that's where things stand with Viking right now. When I try to think of who might be interested in acquiring them, or who might be interested in partnering with them in MASH, the same group of companies pretty much come to mind. First of all, I think of Lilly and Novo Nordisk. However, if they were to acquire or try to acquire Viking, I wonder if antitrust issues could come into play, since those two companies are so entrenched in the obesity space. I would think almost any deep-pocketed big pharma would be interested in Viking's two programs, and particularly the obesity program. So that leads me to think of a company like Gilead, which made such a big splash in 2011 with paying $11 billion for Pharmasset, which had a phase two HCV drug that became the backbone for Sovaldi and the other multi-blockbuster Hep C drugs that Gilead did. So they have a track record here, and they're active in MASH, and I'm sure they're interested in obesity. They're usually sitting on a big stockpile of money, so I would not be surprised to see Gilead emerge here. And then I think companies like Pfizer, Merck, Takeda, Sanofi, J&J, and Roche, the typical acquirers who have broad-based portfolios and broad-based R&D pipelines, all are potential suitors for Viking. That's my assessment of Viking and their situation. And Kevin or Edwin, I was wondering if either of you had any thoughts.
Yeah, very interesting, Joe. Yes, I think, as you mentioned there, I think Pfizer are very much in the frame as a possible acquirer for Viking. It kind of fits a lot with their pipeline as well. They've got a couple of weight loss candidates in the pipeline as well, haven't they, with I think Danuglipron, it's in phase two. So it's an area they're obviously interested in. And also they've been involved with a bit of NASH, stroke MASH as well. So, and they have the money. I mean, what sort of figures would we be talking about, you think, in terms of acquisition? You're saying if the market cap was
7.7 billion.
Yeah, so imagine
nearly a billion.
Right, yeah. So if you think what sort of premium somebody would have to pay to get hold of them, we're in the sort of the range, I don't know, maybe about 10, 12 billion?
Yeah, I think we're talking about two-digit billions. I think we're talking there at least. And how high it would go, I don't believe I'm qualified to estimate that. That would go to one of the PhDs at a place like Leerink or Jefferies. I would be interested to know what one of their analysts would price Viking at. It's a big number. So, and that eliminates a number of people who otherwise would be thrilled to get their hands on VK2735 and or VK2809.
Yeah, it'll be very interesting to see what happens. You know, obviously, Pfizer have got very deep pockets, haven't they? And I wouldn't be surprised if they pick up the telephone to Viking at some stage in the near future.
Yeah, they've certainly gone on record, haven't they, recently about looking to grow through M&A. So they're looking to make the deals.
Absolutely, yes.
And, you know, some of these are just serial acquirers, J&J, Takeda. I think Takeda could be a dark horse here.
That'd be an interesting one, wouldn't it? Yeah. You know, everybody's trying to get, you know, fill those pipelines, aren't they? I saw a very interesting statistic fairly recently. If you look at revenue growth at the moment for companies, it's pretty poor. If you take out, you know, the obvious exceptions of Lilly and Novo Nordisk, a lot of companies are just, their revenues are barely above inflation rates, really. They really need to kick on. And to a company like Viking would be extremely attractive, certainly.
And we're on the precipice of another patent cliff, another fairly major patent cliff. So some of these deep-pocketed companies, I mean, an asset like VK2735 and obesity, they could see that as a growth leader potentially.
So understandably, Mark, Viking have to be very coy about this, but can you see a world where they don't sell or partner this asset, given the sort of major manufacturing challenges even these big companies like Novo and Lilly faced when they tried to hit market with their GLP-1s?
I could see them, unless they're blown away by an offer, I could see them remaining independent for a while to focus on the obesity drug and build up their own value, seeing, you know, what they might be worth with, say, interim phase 3 data or something like that, if there would be an interim readout. I don't know if there's any reason there would be. Based on how it sounded talking to Brian Leon yesterday, I think offloading the MASH program to in some way is close to a certainty. The only way that wouldn't happen is if, you know, nobody came forward with the economics, and the MASH space is still so enticing and the mid-stage data on this drug has been good enough that I just can't imagine a Gilead not being interested in saying in licensing that. And then that would really give a boost to their MASH prospects, where they've had a number of setbacks, but they've been very active in the space, looking at a number of different mechanisms. And so if we're looking at an out-licensing, I like Gilead, and they might be able to, they might have the financial wherewithal to swallow the whole company if they're so inclined. But then even bigger players, like Kevin said, a Pfizer, would come into play. And would that happen before or after the out-licensing of MASH? I mean, I think the MASH, I think it's virtually certain the MASH program makes Viking even more valuable, but I think it's quite possible an acquirer might acquire Viking and then offload the MASH program anyway, just to put so much focus on obesity and the rest of the acquiring company's pipeline. Maybe we're ready to move on to Verona, Kevin?
Yes, absolutely. Thanks, Joe. That was very interesting. Yes, as I spilled the beans a bit earlier, I've been looking at Verona quite a lot of late, and they have 2024 is very much a pivotal year for them, and their chronic obstructive pulmonary disease drug, which is called ensifentrine. Mm-hmm. Now, their new drug application was accepted by the FDA last year, and so they have got a target date of June 26th. And when I look at my calendar, I think, oh, that's miles away. It really isn't, is it? So these things are... We are racing through the year. And interestingly, the FDA has also notified Verona that it's not planning to hold an advisory committee meeting on the application either. Now, the thing with COPD is that there's not been anything for ages, frankly. And, you know, if approved, ensifentrine would it'd be the first novel inhaled mechanism available for COPD. In over 20 years. And Verona, you know, they did a lot of trials, and they've got a good package on this, on the drug, which is it's an inhaled first in class selected dual inhibitor of PDE3 and PDE4. And the file was based on data from two phase 3 trials. They're called ENHANCE, the ENHANCE program. And in those trials, the drug demonstrated, you know, significant improvements in lung function. and substantially reduce the rate and the risk of COPD exacerbations. And so in terms of the clinical package they put together, it is very, very strong. Now, Verona, they're a UK company, but they're listed on the NASDAQ. And quite interesting, their offices are the same building as Scrip in London.
Oh, okay.
Yes, indeed.
So you've overheard some elevator chat, huh, Kevin?
Well, I saw them sort of checking their bank balances and thinking we need to boost this a bit. And they have done, to be honest. They have been raising money pretty sensibly. They had a bit of a turnaround the last few years. This is very much a sort of a one asset company. And they've fairly recently entered into a debt financing facility worth up to $400 million. With a couple of funds, I think, managed by Oxford Finance and Hercules Capital. And they're using it and they are getting ready. They are very confident, as are most analysts, are very confident that they'll get approval by June 26th. And the vast majority of analysts that cover them really think that, you know, when you look at the likelihood of approval, it's all up around, you know, 90-95%. Mm-hmm. So the company's confidence is sort of backed by analysts as well. And they have been putting a lot of preparation in to get a quick launch after approval, if that's the road they go down, which they've said they will. But, you know, as we all know, that can change when the checkbooks come out. So they've already got sort of 100 reps on board to target, you know, the highest prescribing pulmonologists in the States. You know, it's a huge market. I think CDC figures were there's about 16 million adults are affected by COPD, and loads of people don't even know they have it.
Mm.
And so it's the sixth leading cause of disease in the US, and it's a massive problem. And the market, it's a multi-billion dollar market. And they seem very well equipped to take advantage and get a quick launch. Now, whether they will do it themselves or not, they've been regularly questioned. I've asked their CEO, bit of a pronunciation problem here.
Okay.
David Zaccardelli.
Okay.
Who used to be CEO at Dover Pharmaceuticals before they were bought by Sobi. And he was also, interesting, he won Executive of the Year at our Scrip Awards in November. Nothing to do, again, with the fact that he lives in the same building as us.
Mm-hmm.
But so I've spoken to him a few times, and they inevitably the question comes up in terms of partnering and so on. And they say that they could do it themselves. But I think given the attractiveness of having a phase three asset that looks to be approved, there's not many of them going around. And
yes,
I think interestingly, price wise, Verona, well, in my opinion, I don't have a PhD in these sort of things, but in my opinion, I think it would be an absolute snip for somebody because the market cap's about $1.3 billion. So it's not exactly bargain basement, but I think it would fit with a lot of companies who seem to be preferring to go for the bolt-on acquisition approach rather than anything particularly major.
Kevin,
yeah.
Do you have a British to American translation for what you mean by a snip?
A snip is a bargain or a
Okay. I figured, yes. But just
yeah.
Since this will be listened to hopefully on both sides of the Atlantic. And maybe in Asia Pacific too.
Let's stick with bargain. Yes, I think it could be an absolute bargain. They've got an impressive team. Mr. Zaccardelli is an impressive chap, and they are, you know, looking good. as to who would be interested in buying them, a lot, well, one of the major, obviously, would be people, the respiratory companies, you know, the AstraZenecas, and I would have thought that it'd make a very good fit for GSK.
That's the first thing that popped to my mind.
Indeed, yes. Now, there's a slight sort of fly in the ointment a little bit.
Okay.
Possibly with GSK, in that just at the beginning of the year, they bought a company, a respiratory company called Aelos Bio, for a billion up front. Now, they really focus more on severe asthma, but it was interesting that the share price of Verona went down fairly markedly, you know, 5 or 6%, once it was heard that GSK had done a bit of shopping, and so they maybe would have to wait a bit longer if they were going to enter the market again for a buy. So yes, it will be an interesting situation to see whether they will go, whether people will be interested in Verona. I think that it's a bit of a no-brainer, really. As I said before, to have an asset that's about to be approved, or well, it would be astonishing if it doesn't get through the FDA. I don't want to poo-poo their chances or jinx them in any way,
right?
But it covers all the bases, you think, for any company that would wants to add to a very promising drug in a market where also it's a very reimbursable drug as well. You know, Verona put a lot of effort in on this, working out the best path. And I think that, now I'm no expert really on Medicare, so but I think that they are looking specifically at going through the Part B channel, I think I'm right in saying that, you know, Part B generally pays for drugs that a person gets to the doctor's office, and it seems that there's more insurance hurdles perhaps with inhalers with Part D. So anyway, to cut a long story short, I think that in terms of the reimbursement pathway in the States, they're in very good condition, and they've been working very hard on the launch strategies. They've also been making a lot of interesting appointments. They got to meet Christina Ackerman, who came in, been around for a long time in the industry. They've just got a new general counsel in, and so they are, you know, they've hired a team that will be able to make a commercialization of ensifentrine a very, well, hopefully for them, of course, a very successful one.
Kevin, I've been looking at some, I'm sorry, I don't want to cut you off.
No, that was all really, yes, go on, Joe. Yeah.
I've been looking at some analyst notes about Verona, and I saw what you mentioned about the expectations for approval are very high. Jefferies had it 90 to 95%. Wainwright goes as far, this is a note that came out last month, as to say that they think they're a prime acquisition candidate if they get approval. So we're 2.5 months out from their PDUFA date. You know, an approval presumably increases the acquisition price. And I mean, what do you think are the possibilities of that with this high expectations of approval? What do you think the prospects are of them getting picked up before the PDUFA date?
Well, I think that's very possible. I mean, if you look at recently in Europe, we had a Morphosis that had just been acquired by Novartis, or in the process of being acquired by Novartis, where that was just still again on, some would say, rather mixed phase three data. So companies are prepared to pay big bucks. I think the Morphosis deal was something about, well, 5 billion, something like that. So to get hold of Verona before approval, if I was a pharma company, I'd be jumping now, really, before the price does indeed go up. Because as we were saying, it seems that all the pieces are in place for a successful launch once the thumbs up comes through, which again, it could even come before June the 26th, of course.
Morphosis, the price tag on Morphosis was $2.91 billion, and that was the third largest takeout of the year, right up until yesterday when Vertex announced a nearly $5 billion acquisition of Alpine. But still one of the biggest deals of the year, although we're just early in the second quarter.
Indeed. Now obviously it's you can't really compare apples and pears, but you know, is Verona more attractive option than Alpine, for example? And if Alpine's getting that sort of, comes with that sort of price tag, what would Verona be? You know, are we talking a premium of well over 50%? They would be looking for, I'm sure. I think a very, very attractive asset.
Jefferies, in a note dated March 13th, has the Verona drug, which I'm not even going to try to pronounce, as a $1 billion plus peak sales opportunity in a $10 billion plus market. So then we're talking multiples. If someone accepting Jeffrey's analysis, we're talking multiples of a billion plus.
Yeah, absolutely. So it'll be interesting. As for any other potential acquirers, you never know, somebody like a Boehringer might make a bit of sense. They were massive player in the COPD market with Spiriva.
Ah.
So they know the market.
Yeah, I was going to say they're a reasonable choice as well. And that's been sort of treading water sales wise for years now. Now, isn't it?
It is.
But it's still not come down.
In terms of knowing the market and knowing the prescribers and so on, Boehringer is still very well placed, and also interesting, defended Spiriva for an awful long time, having lost the patent. So they know what they're doing in this area, and so maybe a cheeky bid from our German friends wouldn't be a massive surprise either.
No,
sounds like we're almost certainly keeping it in Europe then, between GSK, Astra, and Boehringer.
Yes. Let's wave the blue and gold stars flag a bit here, yes, with a bit of the Union Jack as well. Yes, it'd be nice to, I mean, and that is the interesting thing again in terms of valuations, that always we find some like jaw-dropping stuff that comes over from the States, whereas here you see biotechs just sort of drooling at the possibility of these figures, and often, and certainly the UK companies, obviously Verona are different because they're listed on the Nasdaq. But UK companies, many of them have been snapped up for, can I say snapped up for peanuts? Does everybody in the US understand that?
That one makes perfect sense to me.
Good. Excellent.
It makes me envision an elephant at the circus under the big tent.
There we go. Absolutely. Yes. So, and a lot of UK biotechs have gone for next to nothing. So it'll be nice if they can stay as independent as long as possible. But as we said before, once the checks are passed over the table, it becomes very difficult to say no. So it'll be, let's watch this space, and maybe something will happen in the next month or two. Who knows? But I think Verona are definitely my tick to be taken over.
Edwin, before we move on to your companies, Kevin, something you said about how Verona's drug would probably do well in the payer environment. That is going to be a major consideration with Viking, because both MASH and obesity in the US, you have to deal with the pharmacy benefit managers and getting on formulary and everything. And those are two areas where cost containment is going to be watched. So an acquirer would almost certainly be a company very skilled and very experienced in the reimbursement process. Although I guess anybody with the kind of pockets to acquire a Viking probably also has that experience. Some may be more willing to go there than others. So that's just my thought. Edwin, you have several companies you want to talk to us about.
I do, which means I probably won't be going into the sort of depth that you guys have managed to manage on your topics, but I've picked up three from this article, which went into a few more, and I think these are probably the three companies which I think are more likely to be takeout targets than licensing partners, or to out-license their products, I suppose. The first up, the one I'm going to talk about, is Altimmune. This may sound like a very similar story to Joe's. Their lead asset is pemvidutide, which is also a GLP-1 glucagon dual receptor agonist. It's currently in phase two for both obesity and MASH. So you can see the obvious parallels here with Viking. But for a good reason, both obesity and MASH are obviously very hot markets. And as we've mentioned, whilst you have these established players, both in Lilly and Novo, I think at the moment it's always going up, but the space is forecast to be worth over $100 billion by 2030, which is probably a bit too big for the other companies to let go and just let Lilly and Novo have their play around uncontested. In actual fact, I think we saw Roche take out Carmot at the end of last year in December for $2.7 billion, and they are a fellow GLP-1 player. And sort of by comparison to someone like Viking, Altimmune looks positively affordable. They've got a very low market cap at just under $600 million, so quite inexpensive at that sort of price point. And you know, even as a starting point, this is very good if it gets close to realizing pemvidutide's net present value, which is $3 billion on its own without taking into account other assets they have. And going on from that, their CEO, Vipin Garg, has gone on the record this year saying that they are actively seeking deals and collaborations with big drug makers. And I think going into sort of potential buyers, we've kind of covered that with Joe. It's all the same people who may be looking to Viking. Maybe as a secondary option, if Viking gets snapped up, we can both be correct. Mm-hmm. sort of the secondary budget option being Altimmune.
That makes a lot of sense. And I would think speculation about Viking will raise Altimmune's share price.
Almost certainly. They can grab a little bit more if Viking goes first. The second company I was going to talk about is Xenon Pharmaceuticals, whose chief product is an anti-epilepsy drug. So this is Xen-1101, which is looking to start its phase three this year. It's also in phase two for major depressive disorder, though. Both of those are sizable markets, but they're served by pretty old drugs now. And in the last couple of years, I think we've seen a bit of a renaissance or a surge in interest for deal making in these late stage de-risked CNS assets. So I mean, just in 2023, we saw the takeout of Cerevel and Karuna by AbbVie and Bristol, respectively, for $8.7 billion for Cerevel, which was something like a 73% premium, and $14 billion for Karuna, which was over 50%. And I think whilst Xenon has a reasonable cash runway to conclude its own sort of clinical activities, they still remain fairly affordable with a market cap of $3 billion. If we were to look for potential buyers sort of concentrating on anti-epilepsy, that space is currently dominated by the big players of UCB, GSK, to some extent Sanofi as well. And they're sort of one of the sort of last standing smaller company late stage CNS assets. So I'd be very surprised not to see them go, to be honest, at some point. The last company that I wanted to pull out from this article was Crinetics Pharmaceuticals. So I'm spreading out my therapy areas a little bit here. Their focus is on endocrine disease and the sort of associated tumors with these disorders. Oh. Their pipeline lead at the moment is paltusotine, and this is in phase three for acromegaly. And at the moment, it's looking fairly likely that it's going to become standard of care if they continue to deliver on the results they've been showing so far, which have been pretty good. To sweeten sort of any potential deal that might happen, Paltusotine is also in phase two for carcinoid syndrome and has shown some positive sort of initial data there, although we've not had any major readouts for that yet. Quite notably, it's an oral drug for a condition in acromegaly, which is dominated by injectables at the moment. So it has that going for it, although I suppose at that point you sort of run into compliance questions. Most people have fairly well-controlled acromegaly, so maybe the trade-off won't be there for physicians. But in addition to sort of this one product, Crinetics also has a pretty decent sized tail of early stage assets to their pipeline, which could be attractive for buyers, I think.
Are they all rare disease focused?
For the most part, yeah. You sort of run into some slight confusion as they also they have a spin-out company of their own, which looks at radiopharmaceuticals.
I think they're also starting to play
in the oral GLP-1s as well, diabetes and obesity, although I think they're preclinical off the top of my head. So most of their sort of mid to late stage is certainly in the rare disease area, but...
Which instantly makes me think of Sanofi.
Yeah.
As a potential acquirer.
Certainly. I think if you're looking to get the most out of the company, not just its late stage assets, then Sanofi is probably a very good bet, yeah.
Did you have thoughts on who other suitors might be?
Yeah, so at the moment, perhaps Pfizer. They're currently the sort of big players in acromegaly. Again, it's a very old product. Maybe this is a bit too niche for them at this point. I don't know how well they're sort of supporting their sort of rare disease and acromegaly or growth disorder drugs at the moment. Ipsen is the other one who tends to play in that Ipsen, area.
Yes.
Yeah, so they would be my two if you were sort of just looking at the late stage. But I think Sanofi is a very good call for making use of every bit of the button, as it were.
I think with Sanofi, they have made a few acquisitions. You know, they did a lot the last couple of years, but I think they've slowed down a little bit. And I think that there have been a couple of companies that they bought that haven't been particularly successful, sort of Chiardis, where I think this week they have been saying that they were looking to even to divest a couple of the companies they bought in the past as they focus more sort of on immunology. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with Sanofi. I'm speaking to them tomorrow, which would be interesting. So I'll bring some of this up as to what sort of, they'll probably say nothing, but you never know, as to what sort of targets they're doing. I think that they are trying to focus maybe more on what they've already got, but it will, you know, Sanofi are going through quite a considerable sort of restructuring and reshaping of the business. So whether they'll be getting into much M&A in the near future, I'm not so sure, but you know, we'll see.
The only reason I said them was because I think they've shown interest in recent years in acquiring critical mass and rare diseases. I'm thinking all the way back to the Genzyme acquisition, which that's probably a decade back now.
Yeah. Also, Ed, it was quite interesting. I think we talked about Xenon and you mentioned UCB. They're also a company that, you know, I sometimes forget about as a potential acquirer, but they have done quite a few deals recently. Mm-hmm. And if you look at the price tags that you were mentioning, perhaps in terms of the market cap, UCB could very much be interested in Xenon, I think.
Yeah. I mean, it's certainly not huge, especially with the returns. I think that, in fact, coincidentally, I think all three of these drugs had a sort of $3 billion net present value associated with them at the moment. That seems to be the going rate for these unpartnered assets. But it's not a huge punt, especially sort of considering some of the other companies we've talked about today.
Yeah, and I think that's true that, you know, the companies like, you know, these sort of mid-sized companies, the Ipsens, the Merck KGaA, the UCBs, have shown in the last few years that, you know, they're doing a lot of deal making, you know, and not just partnerships, but really acquisitions. So you know, they fly under the radar a little bit, those sort of mid-sized farmers, but you know, they've got they've got cash.
Yeah, I think we can get, we can sort of fall into that mindset of probably how the industry was almost decades ago now, that it is just the big farmers that are buying everybody up and there's no sort of external development coming from these biotechs. But yeah, everybody's looking to emulate the big boys now.
Well, great. I think that gives our audience a really good summary of what we see as potential M&A activity coming down the road. Kevin, Edwin, thank you both so much for your really thoughtful presentations, and you know, for ongoing coverage of Viking, Verona, Xenon, Altimmune, and Crinetics. I hope all of you will continue looking to Scrip. Thank you for listening to this edition of the Scrip M&A podcast, and we will see you next time.